Welcome back in. Darren and Donick, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good to have you in on this Football Friday. Nick Hale from Morning Drive. Corey Curtis, News 2. Julian Council hanging out with you until 2 o'clock. We did a lot of Titans today. We did some Preds. We got to get to some college football. And to do that and to kick off a good chunk of college football talk is our man Jason Fitz from ESPN. Fitzy, we appreciate a couple of minutes. How you doing, bud?
Hey, man. I'm spectacular. Happy fake Black Friday. See, this is what the... But my life has come down to, you know, for most of my years anyway, I've been gone on Thanksgiving. I'm used to that. But I'm filling in for Trey Wingo next week on Go Look at Wingo for Thanksgiving and Black Friday. So I actually came to Nashville and we did fake Thanksgiving yesterday. Like I found an 80s Macy's Day Parade, watched it on YouTube, lots of hair. It was awesome. And now we're putting up Christmas decorations like everybody does, you know. So we're going to be early to the party.
So, Fitzy, you're back in Nashville. I got to imagine that you think you're probably still in Bristol because it's about, what, 39 degrees outside? What the heck's going on here, man?
Yeah, it is cold, but I'll tell you this. I got pictures last night from everybody in Bristol. They got their first snowfall, and it was like 8 inches. So, Nashville, you know, Nashville's cold, but Bristol's always sitting there saying, all right, hold my beer.
That's 8 inches. That's legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Too much. It's too much. It's too much. And, guys, before we get to any college football, I have to, you know, because I do this every week and I talk to Nashville every week, I have to give everybody a public service announcement because everybody tweets me every time it happens. I am aware that ESPN can't seem to say Mariota instead of Mariota on all of the, ads they run. And believe me, every single time it happens, I send the pronunciation guide page from the Titans Media Guide to all of the people responsible and say, hey, just FYI, every time you butcher a quarterback's name, it really irritates the fan base.
They're just trolling us at this point. They're doing it on purpose.
One step at a time. I'm trying, you know?
But, Fitzy, I'm okay if they keep doing it because it drives Braden Gall nuts, and anything that will drive Braden nuts, I'm on board with.
Now, never mind. I'm never sending an email
exactly.
Again. Now that I know it really drives him nuts, I'm in for it. Tell them all to keep doing it.
So let's kick around some college football stuff. It's not the most appealing week this week across the landscape of college football, but Syracuse-Notre Dame to me is intriguing. I actually think Syracuse has a legit chance this week at Yankee Stadium. When you look at the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, are they vulnerable for the upset, or are they just clicking on all cylinders?
They are clicking on all cylinders, and they're more talented than they've been in the past. I don't know that they're vulnerable for the upset, but I will say this. Syracuse has built a program that's good, and I'm not going to take anything away from this. So there's been a lot of conversation over the last week, too, because Brandon Wimbush came in you know, and played fairly well. It's like, oh, are they going to use a two-headed monster? No. I mean, Notre Dame's not only looking at Syracuse. They're looking at every single opportunity to basically build forward for the playoff they think they're going to make. So that all comes down to the shoulders and legs of Ian Book. And realistically, Ian Book's going to have to come in and I think play well. Do I think Notre Dame wins handily? Yes. But at the same time, Syracuse has built something special. I don't want to take anything away from it. It's just one of those years in college football. I think there are four, you know, maybe three actually, really good teams and then a bunch of mediocre teams. And Syracuse is near the top of that mediocre hump. But there's just such a talent differential, especially on the offensive and defensive lines. I just don't see it.
Could the Citadel rival Cumberland for worst loss in NCAA history when this is over? Because I think, what did the Cumberland lose, like 222 to nothing?
Yep, Georgia Tech.
Yeah. I mean, could we get there?
Well, maybe. But I will say this. I think the most maddening part of that game is if Nick Saban is serious, and he's going to play Tua. I understand that Tua Tagovailoa hasn't played a fourth quarter, and this is going to be a blowout. In everybody's mind, he's not even going to get touched, so what's it matter if they play him? But he is not 100%, and I'm not sure why we're not applying the same conversation to Alabama that we've been applying to Clemson this year. There is one major concern for Clemson. It's that Trevor Lawrence hasn't really done a great job of protecting himself, and they have no depth at quarterback. The key to the Citadel game is, I mean, obviously they're going to crush him. But if there's a freak play and anything happens to Tua, Jalen Hurts is not okay. So who's going to be the quarterback for Alabama? We're allowed to have that same conversation. Just because it's the Tide doesn't mean that they're, you know, not vulnerable to a freak play. And that's got to be the concern when you have no depth at quarterback and an injured quarterback. I would go into that game and play anybody. I don't care if they play fullback at quarterback. Just don't let Tua get touched until next week.
Fitzy, we had Stu Mandel from The Athletic on yesterday, and I asked him about the nightmare scenario for the committee. If Alabama would lose to Georgia in Atlanta in a couple of weeks, and let's say, hypothetically, Clemson runs the table, they're undefeated. Notre Dame wins out, they're undefeated. Michigan runs the table, they're a one-loss Big Ten champion. Do you see Alabama still being one of the four teams that makes it, or could the Tide actually be left out?
I think they make it. You know, it's going to come down to how they lose that game in this scenario. Again, if they lose that game and they've got some issues at quarterback, one of the things that really stunned me when I went down to Dallas a couple of months ago, I was part of the mock committee that they do every year where 13 of us sat in and we debated, I think it was 2013. But we went through the whole process with the committee chair, with the committee people, like sort of telling us how it really works. And we went through the debate. One of the things I wasn't aware of is they have spreadsheets that analyze exactly who's hurt and what plays they missed. So we have to remember that there is a little bit of a benefit of the doubt given if Tua is not 100%, they go down to Georgia and they lose in a close game, they're going to get some benefit of the doubt, like it or not. Ultimately, the Michigan thing comes down to sort of the eye test. And while Michigan has a great defense, they don't have a great offense. So how do you sort of weigh all of that together? And then how do you weigh wins and losses? Alabama's schedule is not held up, but the eye test says that they are incredible. So I have a hard time imagining that we're not in the same exact scenario. What makes that even crazier is in your magical scenario here, if this happens, worst case, you're going to have Alabama, Georgia, and Notre Dame, which means basically everybody else in college football sitting around twiddling their thumbs. I don't think that's great. I mean, I want the four best, but that is not a magical scenario for college football fans.
If you could put a percentage on it, what do you think the percent chance is that Urban Meyer does not return to Ohio State?
So this is always a fine line for me. And I'll tell you, in my mind, I say he's back. There's just we're blowing this out of proportion. But I think one of the things that I've always tried to do is listen to people smarter than I am. And the number of people I talk to on campus that make their living covering college football that have been around it longer than I have, they continue to look at and say he's gone, gives me great concern. So
I think he's scarred.
I think there's a piece, like, I know we all talk about Feinbaum of the world, but it's not just Feinbaum. I mean, Feinbaum, ever since this summer, I filled in on First Take for a couple of weeks, and we had Feinbaum on a couple of times. And even in the summer, he was saying, look, I'm telling you, the signs are there. I've known Urban long enough. Urban is gone. And then I talked to other college football reporters at ESPN that didn't know, and they all continue to say, hey, he's gone, and he's going to go. He's going to take a year or two off just like he did before, and then he's going to find another situation. And, you know, Ohio State's going to have to really look in the mirror at that point and ask themselves, did they get enough out of the Urban Meyer era? Because, you know, there are only a few coaches that sort of transcend their program. He's one of them. And for all the success that they have had, they're going to look back on it and say, man, it's kind of like Mike Tomlin with the Steelers. Steelers fans are always so disenfranchised, even though they've got a great coach and a great team, because they happen to be a great coach and a great team during the Brady Belichick era. What do you do when you've got a great program and a great coach and you just happen to be in the middle of a dominant era of Tide?
So what's your percentage?
I'd say 80% chance he's gone.
Wow. I mean, that's decisive. I'm with you on that. I agree. I completely agree. But that's decisive.
Well, and again, it's not just, you know, I think that it's part of my job covering college football is to listen to smarter minds than I am. And the more of every single person I talk to on campus that wants to talk about it says he's gone. So I at some point I have to listen to everybody and say there's something here. There's something in the tarot cards. And I would have said without anybody else's input, I would have said 25 or 30. But the way I look at it, the minds better than me are saying he's gone, and I trust that.
Fitzy, last one for me, two-part question. One, do you see a scenario where if Jeremy Pruitt wins out these final two games and gets to 7-5, that he's got a legit chance for to be SEC Coach of the Year? Obviously, he'll be competing against Orgeron and Stoops at Kentucky, maybe even Saban and Kirby, but I think people expected them to be good. So likelihood that Jeremy Pruitt can win SEC Coach of the Year. And then secondly, since we're playing the percentage game of whether or not coaches stay, what's your feel on Derek Mason at Vanderbilt?
Those are two great questions. Jeremy Pruitt, I'll stand up and say, hey, I was really wrong midseason. I kept looking at it thinking, same old, and his message just didn't seem to be resonating. And I got the sense from talking to SEC guys that maybe there was a disconnect between he and the rest of the coaching staff already. So I expected an implosion. We didn't see that. And instead, Tennessee, they're going to walk away from this year with a couple of victories that they can hang a hat on, which is significant for a first-year coach with the program. I think, frankly, Kentucky's loss to Tennessee was inexcusable for Kentucky football, and it takes them out of the running for any of that consideration, because there is a moment where you roll your eyes and say, Kentucky football, you can excuse everything else. So, yeah, if he wins out, I think he's got a darn good shot at it, and deservedly so, because he will have absolutely exceeded any of the expectations most people had in a year where the rest of the SEC is down. As for Derek Mason, that's a tough one for me because I happen to just love the man, the myth, the legend that is Derek Mason. But at some point you have to look at it and say, man, when is enough enough? And you look at some of the managerial errors at the end of that last game. You look at clock management. You look at the way he's been with quarterbacks in his life at Vandy. There's this moment where you want a coach to take some transcendent jump, and you want a team to have this identity of whoever coaches them. Do we really see that consistently year in and year out from Vandy? I don't think so. I mean, I don't think Vandy's pushing to make a move because I think they're content to be a 6 or 7 win football team every year. So, I wouldn't be surprised if he stays, but I don't think he should stay at this point if he can't find a way to make them competitive. They should be better than they are right now in my mind.
Fitz, tell the audience about the Twitter show for college football coming up and how people can consume that.
So we do a couple of them now because it's playoff time. So on Saturday nights, the College Football Show, which is hashtag College Football Show, really easy to find on Twitter. ESPN launches it from their Twitter account as well as ESPN College Football. We're averaging almost 1 million people a week hanging out with us every Saturday from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern. And then on Tuesday nights, we do the Playoff Rankings Reaction Show on Twitter also, which comes straight from Mike Golic Jr.'s living room. Yeah, never know who's going to stop in on that one. And that's an awesome way for us. We go in. Right after, from 8 to 9, we go in, Eastern, we go in and immediately react to what the committee just told us. And, there hasn't been a lot of new from the committee, but it will be interesting to see whatever they do with Notre Dame this week after the Syracuse game either way. So there should be some fun there.
Fitz, good stuff as always, man. We appreciate the time. And Darren Adonik will reconvene with you next Friday. Thanks a lot.
Hey, y'all have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for having me.
All right, you too, man.
Jason Fitz, how about that? You're doing a college football show on Twitter from Mike Golic Jr.'s couch.
Times change.
And you're getting paid to do so.
Yeah, that's a good life.
Good life.
Hey, he dropped some bombs there.
He did.
I mean, the Urban stuff was phenomenal.
Let's react to that on the other side, as well as how much pressure should be on Derek Mason if Vanderbilt misses a bowl game. We'll kick that around when we come back. Nick and Corey, ESPN 102.5 The Game.